It's Marketplace Tech for Friday, November 30th. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. One moment, terabytes of data are flowing through the internet in Syria. The next minute, next to nothing. The digital lights went out in the strife-torn country on Thursday, with experts suspecting the Syrian government shut off the net as a tactical measure in its fight against the rebel uprising. Syria's government, for its part, is blaming what it calls terrorists. The internet is a robust machine. Even the Japanese tsunami didn't stop it, but it's not unbreakable. Sam Biddle did a thought experiment that he published in Gizmodo entitled How to Destroy the Internet, and there is some good news for us here in America.
The difference between Syria and a Western free market democracy is that we have a completely privatized internet system and telecommunication system, for that matter. You know, you can either be on Verizon Fios or Time Warner Cable or Comcast. And while these companies might have regional monopolies, the market is still split up geographically into subsystems. There's no American internet kill switch.
On a much smaller scale, transit officials in the San Francisco Bay Area did shut off cell phone and Wi-Fi service to a subway station after getting wind of a planned protest 2 summers ago. But still other countries have forced bigger blackouts. January of last year, authorities effectively shut off the internet in Egypt during protests against then-President Mubarak. And China did it in the region of Xinjiang after ethnic violence there. You can't hide from marketing that wants you to buy a smartphone. Perhaps more interesting is why people resist buying one of these handheld computers. Pew's Internet and American Life Project has some new numbers on the 40% of Americans who remain immune to smartphone charms. Aaron Smith is a researcher there. He says it's about age, money, and interest.
By and large, younger folks would love to have one but can't afford it, and older folks might be able to afford it but don't necessarily want one.
We asked listeners on Twitter if they were kicking it old school and got this response from Steph, the blogger in Boston. Still using a non-smartphone, she tweets, but I'm afraid I'll cave soon. Stay strong, Steph. It's your prerogative. On a street near New York's Greenwich Village, what looks at first like a bodega for groceries turns out to be a museum and shrine to the history of video games. The perfect place to visit on this 40th anniversary of Pong.
There's no crazy rules. There's no rules based upon rules. It's just me versus you in a very uniform mathematical format. Simple, two paddles, it goes up and down, and you just knock the ball back and forth.
Dan Mastin is general manager of Video Games New York. He has vintage games and modern ones on display. And yes, it's also a store where you can still buy Pong, considered the first commercially successful video game.
I have the original Atari systems. I will have a lot of its clones. And I have, for PS1, I have a lot of the Pong remakes for it.
Mastin gets a wistful look in the eye when he describes an early Atari machine that would play just one game, Pong.
They actually made a dedicated Pong console that took a massive amount of batteries and just had two paddles.
So you occasionally come across the original dedicated Pong-only box?
Generally, yes. It's something I like to keep around, but you know, I had someone for a very specific need earlier this year actually persuade me to sell it to them. Like, at heart, we're still a store, so I can't say no to everything, but there are certain things I love to have on location, and that's one that I kind of miss right now.
Pong, released just in time for the holidays, 1972. I'm David Brancaccio, and that's Marketplace Tech. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.